R. Hacha, Noel J. Coats, Robert M. Ross, Timothy C. Miller, Jonathan L. Fuller, Lisa S. Booth, Joseph K. Reed III, Robert W. Lofton, Elaine S. Ryan, John F. Dudley, D. Mathias Rousey Jr., Mark R. Herring, Attorney General, Stuart A. Raphael, Solicitor General, Trevor S. Cox, Deputy Solicitor General, Matthew R. McGuire, Assistant Attorney General, Appellee Counsel.
As one can readily discern from the clerk's recitation of all the parties, each side has 20 minutes. How you allocate it is up to you, but it's 20 minutes to each side. You may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Edward Petrini. For Appellant Old Dominion Committee for Fair Utility Rates, I'm sharing my time with the two other appellants and would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. In this case, we ask the court to hold that under Article 9, Section 2 of the Virginia Constitution, the only governmental entity that may set electric rates is the State Corporation Commission, and that in SB 1349, the General Assembly set electric rates in violation of the Constitution. Article 9, Section 2 makes it clear that the Commission is the one entity in state government with the authority to set electric rates. Article 9, Section 2 speaks in powerful, decisive terms. The Commission, it says, shall have the power and be charged with the duty of regulating the rates of electric companies. I'd like to address first SB 1349 and the implications of declaring it unconstitutional. And second, the words in Article 9, Section 2, which control this case. The Assembly enacted SB 1349 in 2015. It prohibits the Commission from conducting biennial reviews of Appalachian Power's base rates in 2016 and 2018. And it freezes those rates until after the conclusion of a 2020 biennial review. Importantly, the statute does not delay or postpone the rate reviews. It simply eliminates them. Thus, SB 1349 means that 4 years of APCO's earnings that otherwise would have been reviewed now will never be reviewed.
May I ask you this question? One of the arguments on the table is your reading of that clause would prevent the legislature from letting the market set rates.
Yes.
Because of you just completely cutting out the State Corporation Commission. What's your response to that?
Our view is that our position does not prevent that, Your Honor.
Okay.
We've been accused of not having a limiting principle, if you will, that would address that and other statutes. But we do have a limiting principle. Our limiting principle has been stated on brief, and I'm going to repeat it. The Assembly may not remove the Commission's power and duty to regulate electric rates and set rates itself. Let me say it again. The Assembly may not itself set rates. So in the deregulation context, the Assembly is not setting rates. What's involved in this case is the setting of rates.
All right, but it still cuts out the State Corporation Commission, and your argument is only they and only they can set the rates.
That's correct. Only the Commission can set the rates.
You know, I understand what you're saying. Help me understand the introductory clauses under Section 2.
Yes.
The two introductory clauses I'm talking about, the first sentence is, except as may be otherwise prescribed by this Constitution or by law. And the second clause that I draw your attention to is subject to such criteria and other requirements as may be prescribed by law. How do those two introductory clauses affect your argument that the legislature has no place in this process?
We do not argue that the legislature has no place in this process. And the subject to clause in the sentence that I was reading from, subject to such criteria and other requirements as may be prescribed by law, the Commission shall have the power and be charged with the duty of regulating the rates of electric companies. And that subject to phrase, the General Assembly does have power. It may prescribe criteria and other requirements for the commission's exercise of its power and fulfillment of its duty to regulate electric rates. But our position is, Your Honor, that the commission, the assembly rather, cannot totally eliminate that power and set rates itself. That's the difference. The assembly has a role to play. The commission has a role to play under that very same sentence. And the commission's power is not plenary, but neither is the assembly's power plenary.
Well, the assembly's power may not be plenary, but it is inherent. I mean, we're not the Commonwealth of Virginia is not a federal government. There's no Article 1, Section 8 enumerated powers in the Virginia Constitution. It's presumed to have power for the public good, and the police powers inherited from common law. So unless there's language that clearly draws a boundary, it's not the SCC that gets the benefit of the doubt, it's the legislature that gets the benefit of the doubt.
And I'm glad you've hit on that point, Your Honor, because the words subject to such criteria and other requirements as may be prescribed by law, those are the words that describe the assembly's power with respect to the regulation of electric rates. So there is an express limitation on the assembly's power. Otherwise, those words would not be given meaning. And if we merely assume that the General Assembly's power is plenary, then the explicit and powerful grant of authority and the imposition of the duty on the commission are read out of the Constitution.
No, maybe I did communicate. It's obviously not plenary. The SEC is given a very discrete and very specific task
Precisely.
That cannot be taken from them.
Precisely.
But the question is, when you look at the subject to language, the question is if that language is not clearly limiting on this kind of topic the power of the legislative branch of government, then because it is a government of inherent powers, not delegated powers, except through the people, of course, then we presume there's power there.
Well, the Constitution is supposed to be a limitation on the power of the General Assembly. And this language, the subject to phrase, was a limitation on the power of the General Assembly with respect to regulation of the rates of electric companies. And that's very same sentence.
Could the legislature, under the criteria and other requirements clause, allow the SCC to set a rate every 4 years?
I'm sorry?
Could it just pass a law that says the State Corporation Commission will set electric rates every 4 years?
Not all by itself. I don't think so. It could establish an interval for the commission to review electric rates, but the commission needs to have, as it does under current law, continuous regulatory authority.
Well, but with his hypothetical that he asked you, not all by itself. So if the legislature passes the statute he proposes, does it get somehow, is it subject to review by the commission?
Our view would be, Your Honor, that the regulation of the electric rates by the commission should be seamless. That is, that is the model, if you will, that's currently reflected in the law, at least before SB 1340.
Seamless in what way?
Well, it's seamless in that the commission never loses jurisdiction over the rates. The cases are held every 2 years, the biennial reviews of the base rates, and
right.
The commission may look back over the prior 2 years to consider earnings that were generated, and it also may, if certain statutory tests are met, adjust rates going forward. But the commission's regulatory jurisdiction is never broken. And what I was getting from Justice McCullough's question was a situation where that would be, in effect, broken, much like SB 1349, which completely takes the commission's power away and substitutes the assembly setting of the rates.
All right.
Robert Perot with Joseph Pope. We represent the DML VACO APCO Steering Committee. If I can address, maybe add a little bit here and address Justice McCullough's question about the biennial review delay, that question he proposed. That may be all right, but the delay here is delay and you can't regulate rates ever during or the rates that have been delayed. So there's a four-year period that there can be no refunds at all under SB 1349, no matter how much APCO earns or over-earns above its allowed rate of return. That's a distinction that I believe shows why this particular statute is unconstitutional. I think we would say that the Constitution really made a division of roles here.
Is this type of legislation, is there any precedent for it historically? I mean, SEC's been around for a while, and maybe there's some railroad analogies or something, but, I mean, has this type of thing been done before?
By the General Assembly? Right. I do not know of a case that's done that with respect to, say, railroads. There's some argument that there are...
Electric authority is more recent, but corporation goes,
well,
goes back
we believe there are other statutes, and the others may argue that have done what SB 1349 does, have been like that. My take on that is very simple. Each statute comes on of its on its own. Those statutes' constitutionality, to my knowledge, have never been challenged. And we're challenging constitutionality here. And I think just the fact there may have been other statutes out there that have done something similar doesn't really make them correct unless they've been challenged.
The thing I don't understand is the subject to clause is not a limitation on the legislature. It's a limitation on the SEC. And the language of the subject to is very broad. Such criteria and other requirements. That's incredibly broad. And it's ambiguous. And maybe there's wise or unwise legislation that comes out of it. But that's not our role to judge.
Well, I would say our view is that subject to language means that the commission, that the assembly can tell the commission how to regulate rates, but it cannot regulate the rates itself. And that's the problem with this statute. The commission has taken the role given by in the Constitution to the commission to regulate rates and has itself done that by preventing any regulation for this four-year period of the rates.
Well, what you're basically saying, and it may make perfect sense, is that the subject to criteria presumes that something exists, excuse me, that you can't change.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, the subject to criteria to me is just... We'll tell you how you can regulate the rates. We can tell you how to determine the rate of return, for example. But that doesn't establish a rate. It's up to the commission to exercise its expertise to establish that rate. And that's what I believe that clause means.
That part is untouchable, as far as you're concerned.
Yes, sir. That's all what right. It means. May please, the court, I would like to yield to Mr. Torrent.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Karen Torrent, and I'm here today as appellant pro se. And perhaps more importantly, I'm appearing as one of the millions of ratepayers in the Commonwealth of Virginia who is being adversely affected by SB 1349. I have but 2 points to make this morning, and they concern what the impacts of SB 1349 will be if it is allowed to stand. First, if this court upholds the SEC decision, there will be nothing to prevent the General Assembly from coming back and from passing future legislation like 1349. Moreover, that legislation could be even worse, if it's possible, for Virginia ratepayers. There is nothing to prevent the General Assembly from coming back, passing a bill that is of longer duration between rate makings.
There is something to prevent that.
Your Honor.
Democracy. People elect our members of the General Assembly, and if the people reject the wisdom of their legislation, they should find someone else to take the job.
Yes, yes, Your Honor, that is actually a great deal. But I would say here SB 1349 has two periods, a five-year period and a seven-year period. There's nothing to prevent the legislature from coming back next year and saying, well, let's do a 15 or a 20 or a 15-year period. To fully understand the ramifications of this, we must look at the impacts that this bill has had on not only the utilities, but the ratepayers. Under SB 1349, the utilities have benefited greatly. It has been estimated that Dominion will make about $300 million in excess revenues in each of the 7 years until its next rate review. As for APCO, it is estimated that it will make $41 million per year over the 5 years until its next rate review. Contrast that with what Virginia ratepayers get under SB 1349. Virginia ratepayers have no recourse other than to pay the electric bills that for service that they've never received. And that is true whether you are an APCO family living in APCO territory down in Southwest Virginia, where utilities make up a higher percentage of their monthly bills, or a family up in Dominion territory in Northern Virginia. My second point is that if the SEC decision is allowed to stand and SB 1349 to remain in effect, the purpose and object sought by the framers in creating Article 9, Section 2 will be thwarted. There is no question that Article 9, Section 2 was created to protect Virginia consumers from the undue political and economic influence of electric utilities. Additionally, SB 1349 and the lower court decision will also continue to ignore the intent and the will of the citizens of the Commonwealth who ratify Article 9, Section 2.
You're down to 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. This court must exercise this authority and do what the SEC and the Attorney General have refused to do. Make effective the will and intent of the people and protect Virginia ratepayers from excessive overcharges. You can do this by finding that SB 1349 is unconstitutional and remand the case back to the SEC for further determination. Thank you.
All right, you have 3 minutes and 40 seconds left.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Stuart Raphael for the Attorney General, and I'm here with counsel for APCO, Mr. Rolfe, and Mr. Dudley is counsel for the State Corporation Commission. We're going to be dividing our time accordingly. I want to focus on three reasons why we think the Commission correctly decided this case and dismissed the appellant's challenge. First, the plain language of Article 9, Section 2, as interpreted by this Court in BEPCO and PEPCO, make clear that it unambiguously gives the General Assembly the power to restrict the Commission's
rate. Suppose I find the language ambiguous, perhaps wrongly, and that there is some broad language in BEPCO, the BEPCO and PEPCO cases, but some of that's arguably dicta. Can you point me to anything that would help me ascertain the original public meaning of these clauses? In terms of debates,
sure.
Whatever, anything.
I think there are a couple things. One would be Senator Breeden's statement about the purpose of the amendment and changing the language from the CCR, the Commission on Constitutional Revision. Another would be the decision by BEPCO in 1974, which said that really the history of the longstanding presence of the exception for sales to municipal governmental customers was irrelevant in construing the language, that this court interpreted the language as giving the legislature the power to restrict the commission's rate-making authority. And then I think the whole history of regulation since then by the altering of regulation by the General Assembly. So there's the 1992 deregulation law, which not only deregulated, but it also froze rates for initially 6 and then another 3 years, a total of 9.5 years. And that's a longer period than what we have here. And no one made a peep at the time that that would somehow restrict the commission's constitutional authority. The 2007 statute itself significantly restricts the commission's rate-making authority, as ODC says in its opening brief. I mean, they explain how under that regime you can only have a base rate case every 2 years, and any overcharge can't be rebated after the first biennial. It's got to be credited and amortized. It's only after 4 years that you can actually do a rate reduction. Right. So these are significant restrictions, And I think this court's decision in Howe versus McAuliffe, which is not my favorite case, but the Howe versus McAuliffe indicated
Counsel, I have a question after my rather smart-alecky comment just then. If, in fact, we disagree with the dicta and VEPCO and PEPCO, where does that leave the Commonwealth's position?
Well, I think our position is still that the statute's constitutional. You could disagree. I don't think it was dicta, but if the court thinks it was, I do think that the things I just said in response to Justice McCullough show how the course of conduct by the General Assembly, and I didn't mean to be snarky.
I was agreeing that Howell versus McCullough wasn't my favorite opinion either.
But the chief's opinion for the court in that case made clear that history, a page of history is worth a lot, and there is a lot of history here about the General Assembly interpreting its power under Article 9, Section 2, is allowing it to restrict the rate-making authority of the commission. And so I think that's a classic application of that principle from Howell versus McCullough.
It's a little ironic. The most recent history is the SEC has also agreed with your position, and one member of the SEC raises the issue sua sponte. I mean, that's not a bubbling up tradition over decades of legal history.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and no one recognized the issue until Commissioner Dimitri raised it, as you said, in the Dominion proceeding. I think that is quite compelling.
So, counsel, you raised the issue of no limiting principle, which Mr. Petrini responded to, and let me ask, what is the limiting principle for the Commonwealth's position here? And let me give an example to illustrate what I'm concerned about. If we find that the General Assembly can supersede the SEC's rate-making authority to the extent that is done in Senate Bill 1349, let's go down the slippery slope to the point where the Senate Commerce and Labor Committee establishes a subcommittee for the establishment of electrical rates that reviews the rates every 2 years or 5 years or whatever to determine whether the General Assembly will extend 1349 based upon any number of different factors. Would that be constitutional?
Can I unpack that a little bit?
The way the
question poses sort of a separation of powers issue with regard to a committee doing something for the General Assembly, but I'm assuming that it's the General Assembly acting as the, bicameralism and presentment, then I understand the question. And I think the answer is we took the position below that SB 1349 didn't set the rates. It froze the rates that were set by the commission. I was asked at oral argument by the commission, well, could the General Assembly set a rate? And my answer there is the same as it is here, and that is there are two possible answers. One is that, yes, they could set the rate, and that would be consistent with what this court said in VEPCO. Alternatively, maybe they can't set a specific rate, but they can set parameters that effectively drive what the rate will be, as they have done in many provisions in Chapter 10.
Okay. If in fact, VEPCO, the dicta or the holding, however, whatever it is, was correct, and the General Assembly could set the rate, would you see a constitutional problem there? I mean, you don't have to agree with, we don't have to agree with what the Supreme Court did in 1974. Neither does the Office of the Attorney General.
Well, let me make it clear that we are not advocating that the court decide now that the General Assembly can set a rate. I don't think you need to decide that here, and we'd ask that you not decide it because, quite frankly, as you know, our sympathies are with the appellants in this case. We think that SB 1349 represents bad policy. So actually, we would not like to see the court decide that.
But I don't know. I understand that you're not advocating for that, but I can't find the limiting principle that would prevent that from coming down the road.
Well, if I were on the court, I wouldn't see a huge problem with that because in our democracy, the legislature gets to decide what the law is, and it's a very unusual thing for an agency to be paramount. The 1902 Constitution did that for the Commission's regulation of transportation and transmission companies. It specifically said that their authority was paramount. But when the drafters of the 1971 Constitution looked at the text that Professor Howard came up with, they didn't like that aspect of it, and they added phrase one at the beginning of the clause. The other thing I'd point out in response to the Chief's questions about the text of Section 2, you know, if you look at the paragraph structure there, every sentence begins with a different type of exception. So the very first sentence says, subject to the provisions of this Constitution and such requirements as may be prescribed by law, and it goes on to talk about regulating corporations. The second paragraph says, except as may be otherwise prescribed by this Constitution or by law. The words are slightly different. And then the next sentence has a similar accepting language. They're all different. And I think the significance of this Court's decision in VEPCO is that it said those small differences don't make a material difference. They all give the legislature the power to act here. And to your point, Justice Mims, all of these provisions fit into the same bucket, right? You could say, I understand the argument, gee, why would we have put rate making into the Constitution if the General Assembly can take it away? But you could say the same thing about all the other provisions where the General Assembly can restrict the Commission's power. Okay, that same argument applies to everything.
Well, and actually there may be a middle ground there, and you just brought up the Professor Howard's original draft from 1969 and the fact that it was changed when it was submitted to the people in 71. But when you look at the General Assembly's proceedings where that clause was added, it says very clearly, the intention being to give legislative control over the general aspects of rate making.
Yes.
So the general aspects of rate making would, and I believe do include, the 2007 Act. But the question is, have we gotten now into the specific aspects of rate making? In other words, setting a rate for the next 5 years or 7 years. If so, that's where the General Assembly drew the line when it put it out for the citizens to the citizens in 1971.
No, I understand your point. I think that affirming the decision here does not in any way require that you say that the General Assembly could set rates. You could draw the distinction you just did about general requirements, but this law fits comfortably within that because it restricts the Commission less than the 1999 law did, which froze rates for 9 years. I mean, Justice McCullough asked about, you know, is there any precedent for this? There absolutely is. The 1999 law, as amended, which froze rates for a total of 9.5 years, is a longer period than what is at issue here. No one said anything at the time that restricted improperly restricted the Commission's rate.
Well, and it was, and as you well know, it was for an entirely different purpose because of the belief that competition, that the market would eventually kick in.
Yes.
And it never did.
That's correct. But I think the key point there is that if the plaintiffs are right, if the petitioners are right, that the Article 9, Section 2 prevents the legislature from taking away the Commission's rate-making authority, then deregulation falls into that same category as well. I mean, you might ask them on the vote.
It easily could have, but it was never challenged.
And, you know, it's you need, I think, to separate this case a little bit from the sort of the political context in which it arises. People have expressed concern, appellants have expressed concern that there's been some kind of regulatory capture here of the legislature. This issue is controversial, and as Justice Kelsey pointed out, if the people don't like what the legislature has done, they can throw them out of office. But the flip side is, imagine a situation where you have unelected commissioners who are doing things that people don't like. They don't have the people don't have the ability to throw the commissioners out. Of course, the legislature could not reappoint them when their six-year appointment comes up. The point I'm drawing here is that having an agency that's not the legislature that has paramount authority to do something that the legislature can't change is really a legal unicorn in our country. There may be one or two other states that give their state PUC some kind of power that the legislature can't alter. But as Justice Kelsey said, you begin from the presumption that the legislature has plenary power, and you've got to find something in the text of the Constitution that restricts that power, and you just can't find that in the text of Article 9, Section 2, because it does not say that the SEC's power is paramount or exclusive or can't be touched. And for these reasons, we think the Court should affirm. And if there are no further questions for me, I'll pass the baton to the SEC counsel.
May it please the Court, my name is John Dudley, I'm with the State Corporation Commission, and I'd like to make two brief points about the Commission's findings within the four corners of the Commission's order. My first point is the Commission tried to answer as narrow of a question as it could. The Commission found that a four-year freeze of a base rate that had been set by the Commission could be considered a requirement under Article 9. Second, when the Commission looked at this four-year freeze, it also found that this freeze was like other legislation that restricts when the Commission can and cannot set base rates.
Counsel, let's hypothetically say that the General Assembly amends the Act created by 1349 to make it indefinite, to take the ceiling off of it. Would that be constitutional?
I do not have an answer for that, very respectfully, Your Honor, because, and that's why when I preface my two brief points within the four corners of the order, the Commission explicitly decided it was not going to reach that question. It explicitly said, because these arguments were made by the other counsel, other appellees, about where the line is, where is there a line, and the Commission explicitly said it was going to answer, look at this specific four-year freeze. It was not going to address and make findings as to if a four-year freeze is okay, how about 24? How about 44?
So the reason you're not answering it is because your client has instructed you not to answer it.
No, my client hasn't instructed to me. I'm representing the Commission.
Yes.
The Commission's
client.
The Commission's order, right. And the Commission's order instructs that the Commission does not have an answer, and I can't make up an answer for the Commission. That's why,
I respect the position you're stating, and I respect your extraordinary experience in this field. But if in fact 5 years is acceptable under our Constitution, and 7 years is acceptable, then we really are on a slope. Is 50 years or 70 years acceptable? Is indefinitely acceptable? And I understand you are not in a position to respond to that, but that is one of the issues we have to grapple with.
And I had thought about this question, so I have a sort of a two-part answer. One, I believe that the court could do what the Commission did, that the court doesn't have to answer the 44-year or the 24-year or the 7-year question. The court can look at a 4-year freeze,
which would be consistent with our jurisprudence. We answer the narrowest and best answer to the case before us and don't prognosticate about hypotheticals that are not arguably in the realm of foreseeability.
And that was cited in our brief. And the Commission also looked at that even during, when looking at this specific freeze, even during this freeze, the Commission is still setting electric rates for costs that are not in base rates. The Commission is still setting rates for certain generation, for transmission, for underground distribution, for fuel, for environmental compliance. So when the Commission looked at this very specific, this particular freeze, the Commission concluded that the strong presumption, the strongest presumption, and that in the final order repeats it over and over, but the strongest presumption of the constitutional validity of the statute had not been rebutted because of the doubts that the Commission has, that I just explained in the final order. And Justice Mims, before I hand it over to APCO, I had thought about how do I not answer questions that are outside the four corners of the order that I don't have an answer to. And I think the court's rules contemplate such situations. The court's rules allow any party to the case to be an appellee as a matter of right. So unlike the Commission is the tribunal discussing the order. Unlike that, the Solicitor General was able to go beyond the bounds of the order. So I think the court's rules
I truly respect the position you're in, and I respect who you are and how long you've been doing this and how well you do it. So I'll withdraw the question that I asked of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
May it please the court, I'm Robert Rolfe, representing Appalachian Power Company.
Now I'll ask you the question.
I thought you might.
Yeah.
Your Honor, I think the answer to the question lies in the Constitution. And your question inherently says, is there some limit on the General Assembly's power written into Article 9, Section 2 of the Constitution? And I don't think you need to get there necessarily, but I think the Constitution tells us there is no limit unless that limit is plainly and expressly stated in the Constitution. That's what Article 4, Section 14 of the Constitution tells us. And you can't imply, you can't infer a limit merely from the fact that the Constitution gives some power of legislative authority to the State Corporation Commission, because Article 4, Section 14 tells us you can't imply that.
Based upon your answer, the General Assembly could create a subcommittee to establish base rates, and from now on, the General Assembly could establish all base rates, and it would be constitutional.
Your Honor, I think the way the Constitution is written, that could happen. It may not be a good thing, but I think that the Constitution doesn't clearly and plainly take that authority away from the General Assembly, and that's what you have to find. You have to look for language, because if you don't see plain language that takes that authority away from the General Assembly, our Constitution tells us that the General Assembly, as the representative of the people, has power. And so you have to find in Article 9, Section 2, an express and plain or a necessarily implied limitation on the power of the General Assembly. And there is no limitation in Article 9, Section 2. That subject to language is a limitation on the power of the Commission. It's not a limitation on the power of the General Assembly. And indeed, the drafters knew how to limit the power of the General Assembly if they wanted to. You can look at the 1902 Constitution. You can look at the language in the first paragraph of Article 9.
The author of the provision that you are referring to specifically said on the record that it was to give legislative control over the general aspects of rate making. That being the case, then by implication, the SCC would continue to have authority over the specific aspects of rate making. And one of the questions before us is this a general aspect or is this a specific aspect?
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, I beg to differ. Because the author of that language, whatever he may have said, he didn't put that language into the Constitution. You're bound by what the Constitution says.
Can we not look at the Constitution's language? Can we not look at the statement that was made at the time the General Assembly added that as indicative of the intent of the General Assembly, if in fact there is an ambiguity about what it means?
If you find an ambiguity in what it means, you can certainly look at the legislative intent. But I suggest to you that there is no ambiguity given what the Constitution tells us about the General Assembly's power.
It would appear that the juxtaposition of subject to and except to may create an ambiguity.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. If you look, for example, in the first paragraph of Article 9, Section 2, it says, for example, that the Commission shall be the agency that grants all charters for corporations. There's no language like that in the second paragraph where it deals with, or the second sentence where it deals with the language of rate making. It doesn't say the Commission shall set all rates or shall be the agency that sets rates. It says subject to such criteria and requirements as may be prescribed by law, the Commission shall have this power. It doesn't say we're taking it away from the General Assembly. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Thank you. When Senator Breeden said that the intention was to give the General Assembly power over the general aspects of rate making, It did not. He did not say all aspects of rate making. And that's what setting a rate does.
If we're getting into a distinction, if we're getting into a distinction between the word general and the word specific, which is an incredibly elusive distinction, I would suggest, then we have to default to first principles. And again, as I said earlier, we're not interpreting the enabling clauses of the federal Constitution, which is a government of a delegated only empowered powers. We're not interpreting the necessary and proper clause of Article I. We're interpreting a presumed authorized and empowered legislature and looking for clear, not ambiguous, but clear limitations.
Ian?
Go ahead. In our own Constitution.
And the powerful and explicit delegation by the people of the power to regulate electric rates to the Commission and the duty to regulate electric rates to the Commission is an explicit limitation on the Assembly. Why would the...
But it has a gigantic qualifier, several of them actually, attached to it.
Granted, and we certainly recognize that qualifier with respect to subject to such criteria and other requirements, but the explicit limitation on the General Assembly is the explicit grant of power and authority to the Commission. And this Court has recognized that when, and we have cases in our reply brief, Anderson and Parham and others where the Constitution grants a specific power, this Court has not hesitated to say, well, wait a minute, the General Assembly can't intrude on what a power has been granted to a school board or to a county board explicitly under the Constitution. With respect to this notion that the Commission initially set these rates, the SEC never set them outside the biennial review framework. It never said that these rates were going to be in effect for 9 years. The rates were set, the rate level was set in the 2011 biennial review case, and there were some minor tweaks in the 2014 case. But the Commission is limited in how it can set rates in those cases. It has to look to the prior year, in other words, in order to do that, the test year as it's called. So the Commission was looking at costs in 2010. It wasn't setting rates for 2020.
Is it relevant to your legal analysis that the entities whose power has allegedly been unconstitutionally usurped doesn't agree with you?
It is a de novo question of law as to whether the Constitution...
But is it relevant in our de novo analysis that the very entity who you claim has been constitutionally usurped has thoroughly examined the question and the entity has voted that it has not been usurped?
I can only say that the split decision of the Commission on that position speaks for itself. We have to assume that the Commission was looking at the law in the best way that it could. But respectfully, it's up to this Court to review that constitutional determination.
All right. Thank you very much. Your time has expired. The Court is adjourned.
All rise.